Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to today's podcast. In today's segment, we will be talking with Mr. Patrick Murphy, the president of Results Technology. They are a leading managed IT services provider based out of Kansas City. And we're also joined by two of his colleagues, Mr. Mike Gilmore, the COO, Chief Compliance Officer, CCO, and Mr. Tim Koch, Director of Operations. Thanks for joining us, everybody, and let's go and get started.
Thank you.
Well, thanks. Okay. Welcome. We're glad to be here.
Well, thank you for your time, everybody. Well, Patrick, let's go ahead and get started telling us about Results Technology. Can you tell us a little bit about it, please, and how you got started, how the company got originated, kind of where you're at today, and what your plans are for the future, perhaps?
Sure. Not a problem at all. And, again, we're honored to be on here with you today. But so who is Results? We're a 25-year-old company. Our headquarters is in Lenexa, Kansas, which is a suburb of Kansas City. We also have an office over in St. Louis, and we, as I said, we've been in business for about 25 years. We support approximately right now about 80 different businesses out there, and what we do for them is a range of IT services. Our main services that we do is we make sure that they get the data when they need it, protect that data if they go on the internet, keep them off of the bad spots and the bad people coming in. We make sure that they have business continuity, so if something adversely happens to them, they can keep going and they continue with their business. And last but not least, we make sure that they stay off the front page of any business magazine for the bad reasons and keeping them safe that way. Out of those businesses, we support over 1,200 different end users. So basically, we sit there and manage these 1,200 people just like we were their IT department. Things come in from help desk all the way through network complexity, and we sit down and make sure they get their information. Our main focus right now is, or has been for the past 10 years, I would say, is mainly in the financial industry. We've been finding that the compliance and security that is needed in the financial industry has become more strict as time's gone on, and will be even more strict as more and more bad things happen through data and personal identification, information stolen, and so forth. So our main goal in that area is to make sure that they meet the compliance, are secure, and the areas that we mainly work with is in the community banks in the rural areas where they can't afford the tools, they don't have the knowledge built into the organization in itself. And so that's kind of who we are. Where we're going is we're actually growing our market in between, say, since we're in Kansas City, between the two mountain ranges and in the Midwest. We've had a growth strategy for quite a few years and continue to meet our goals and surpass that. And firing on up, just keep growing and sticking in that as we focus on that right now. One of the things that ages ago that we came up with when we were starting out and growing, we said, okay, why are we in business? What's the main reason we're in business? And what we came up with is that our mission statement is to help people. So as I always say, right now our mission statement is to help people, .. in technology today. So we'll see where it goes from there. But that's kind of who we are.
Excellent, excellent. Now, great. Let's talk to you about the pandemic, the COVID-19, and its effect on the SMB market, small and medium-sized businesses. As an MSP, I mean, obviously Results Technology has been, I guess, in the thick of this for like what, the last 2 months almost, helping, you know, business owners transition from their offices to a work-from-home environment in a seamless fashion. How has this impacted you personally, you know, and anybody who wants to respond, and your business as well, too?
Well, it happened pretty fast, not only for us, but for our clients. I was actually out of town at the time when the governor of Kansas and Missouri started to shut everything down and the city itself start shutting things down. And I was trying to converse with everybody back in the main office that we have. And it was kind of funny. All of a sudden it was like, yeah, we should be okay. We're just going to keep monitoring it. And the next thing you know, it's like, okay, we have to scramble to get everybody home and working from home. And so our main thought right away, Robbie, was that we would sit there and let's look at the safety of our employees first and then our client employees second and kind of blended the two together. We're kind of lucky being a tech company. We had the capabilities of moving everybody out to the home and, you know, keeping everything running. And again, a goal is if we had to go on site, what were we going to do? And so we also then developed a communication program where we had to sit there and say, okay, so how are we going to keep results being results and provide the great customer service excellence that we do to our clients? So we had to take a couple steps back and say, okay, what are our policies and procedures? Oh, yeah, that's right. We had those in place. How are we going to function? How are we going to stay as a team? Oh, okay, well, let's set up some calls. Let's set up some policies and procedures when we do go out. Let's ask our clients first, have you had anybody with any symptoms? Well, then we're not going to send our employees out and contaminate even more locations if our employees had symptoms. How do we make sure that they don't go out anywhere? Do we have enough masks? Do we have enough gloves? And so we had some of this product already in and the PPE so we could move forward and, make sure if we did have to go to a client's site, on site, that we were protected, especially our employees. And so then, the next step is how do we function after that? We have seen some of our client base, some of our clients themselves be affected tremendously by this. They are in the travel industry or, public facing or restaurant industry. And so they had to shut down completely. But, one of the nice things is we also work with financial industries, which happens to be an essential industry out there. So that's kind of good for it. But then one of the strange things is our clients moved to the work from home aspect that we saw is that we had to become educational. Most of the employees of the over 1,200 that we support, they've never worked from home. They haven't had that capability of, being on their own. If they had a problem with a PC or something like that, or they didn't have to work through a VPN, they didn't have to worry about it. But once they got home, they had to worry about it. And then the IT groups and the board of directors and the presidents and the CEOs and everybody had to sit there and think, well, hold it, is that still safe? Did they have a PC to get home to, when they went home? Are they working off of their, teenagers' gaming system? And so we had to take a big drastic change instead of not only supporting our clients but also educating them on doing the right thing at the right time and making sure it works. So although we haven't been affected too bad by this, we had the capability of moving forward and attacking and getting onto the thing. The biggest thing that we had, that was some of our clients were extremely affected, and we're working with them to make sure that when they do come back that they're supported by us and that they still have support while things are going on at this time. So our luck was that we already had policies and procedures and concepts already in place on that one.
Okay, excellent. Now, Tim, as the operations manager for Results Technology, there must have been, a lot of chaos, a lot of confusion, panic. What problems are your clients running into these days, or what do they run into, and how do you resolve them?
Well, primarily as we ran into this, it was very obvious that some were more prepared than others. I mean, you have, in what we do, you have businesses across the platform of some are very extremely technology forward, meaning they're already been moving to the cloud. They're already pushing everything out of the office as much as possible. Employees kind of work from home, but not really. And then you have the other extreme where it's still everybody comes in the office every day. Your facilities are, everything is in-house. And then they're all working on physical PCs versus laptops. So it was really kind of crazy to determine where they sat in the realm of being able to go from in the office every day to going at home every day. And it was crazy to watch really the big scramble for hardware as this unfolded. So you think about the normal things that much of us don't pay much attention to. You know, you can go on Amazon and buy a webcam, fairly decently for $15. Now all of a sudden these things are $159, and it's the price gouging really started in. You look at those that had, the full-on tower PCs. Now we're looking for laptops. Well, the reality of it is the industry was already in a crunch for laptops due to a processor issue that started, at the end of last year. So now laptops are being a struggle. Well, now what you have is not only are you having people move home that don't have a laptop, but now they got to take monitors. So what you really seen was the equipment of how to function really skyrocket. So, you take a PC home, but a PC doesn't have a laptop. It doesn't have a video camera. It doesn't have a microphone. It just doesn't have a lot of that stuff. So really that's where we've seen a big scramble hardware-wise was getting them the ability to work from home with everything that they functionally needed. And, of course, because this was happening, what you've seen was everything started getting backlogged and more so backlogged. And now what we're seeing is Amazon is reserving the right to determine what is essential and what is not essential. So things that we are trying to get our customers are not necessarily essential. So where they would normally have it in the proposed 2-day shipping, it's now taking a few weeks or a month. So then we were able to get them working from home and doing that right. And then all of a sudden we run into a really internet access problem. So their home is not necessarily set up to function accurately in a business type of format. For instance, my dog's sitting at my feet because if he wasn't at my feet, he'd be upstairs running around being crazy and we wouldn't be able to have this conversation. So doing that also includes those of us with like family. So I'm sitting here, I've got my laptop open, I've got my phone going on, and I've got another laptop that I'm running some work on. Right now, that's just me. I also have my wife who's on her laptop, her phone, and then two teenage kids that are trying to get their work from home school done to finish the year out. Plus, they're on their phones doing whatever kind of nonsense. And I would guarantee you my son's up there gaming because I'm not watching right now. So the internet access problem, it was really big to try to help them understand what they need to limit when they're trying to actually work and when they're doing the high-stress calls of video and voice, things of that nature. And then it's also then you stack on the circumstance where they may not have the correct licensing. So if you've got a staff of 25 people and they're all used to being in the office, except for maybe three or four that travel, that you have licenses for them to connect from outside of their office into their office. Now all of a sudden you've got a licensing issue because not everybody can connect. So there was a big struggle to get licenses quick enough, to get them access so they could actually access their data that was in the office from their home machines. Then you look at security issues. Patrick mentioned that people aren't necessarily set up to work from home. So they may be using a gaming system. They may be using an old system. Well, what are the security features of that thing? When's the last time it was patched? Who knows if it even has antivirus on it? So really looking at those things was critical to making sure not only are they able to work from home, but that they're able to do it securely. And sometimes that ran into, are those software pieces even capable? For instance, we no longer work with XP and Windows 7. But with that being said, this has forced us to go back and to work with those to make sure that we can get those systems upgraded as quickly as possible, allowing them to be as functional as possible. And then, of course, the last thing is phones, right? Everybody uses phones. How are they making their phone conversations? How are they calling? Some have the ability to quite literally pick their phone up off their desk, take it to their home, plug it in, and then they can use their phone just as in the office. But what you inevitably have are those of us that are a little bit younger that have moved into a complete wireless infrastructure in our home. So you don't have the ability to do that with the office. So now we got to look at, does their phone provider provide them a soft phone capability or maybe an app that they can put on their cell phone that when the call goes out, it shows their work number, not their cell phone number, because now you're handing out your personal information in the process of trying to conduct business day to day. So those are just some of the topics that was really complex and for us to figure out. Luckily, being in the industry we're in, a lot of this stuff is second nature to us, but it's not second nature to our customers. And being in the process of helping people, we had to help really each person at each company be able to work remotely so that they can continue to function while we're going through this pandemic.
Okay. This is one side question I want to ask you there. Now, I wrote an article for a client about how you can use the cloud to, you know, rapidly deploy your workforce to work remotely and using the cloud and using all of the available tools there. Now, have you seen uptick in the usage of both the AWS and Azure to make like virtual desktops, virtual servers more accessible to employees versus than just using a hardwired device?
So yes and no. So those that are used to working from home, that information is already set up, or I'm sorry, not working from home, but working remote, that's already set up. Those tech advanced companies, they may be using Azure, they may be using a different type of solution. But with that being said, really the priority for even those that weren't tech forward was getting the access, the right licensing in place, because with the licensing, they don't need the Azure unless it's already part of their infrastructure. So we didn't necessarily see an uptick in that type of software usage. We've seen an uptick more in the licensing to connect them from wherever they're at, be it at their house or a Starbucks or McDonald's, back to their main infrastructure is what we really seen an uptick in software from.
And,
okay,
and Ravi, this is Patrick. I think where you're going to see the uptick is now as they start coming back. You know, there were so many companies that had to scramble, you know, just figure we you know, handle 80, you know, either full management or, you know, some pieces off to the side. But the ones that weren't ready and, you know, thought the cloud was, you know, something that's going to open them up to issues. Right now, I think you're going to find that people are going to take a step back and say, okay, maybe I should go from Lotus Notes to Office 365. Maybe I should, or Microsoft 365 now. Maybe I should do something different. You know, so, you know, I think we're going to see a huge change in the paradigm of cloud usage, you know, not having the client server type of software in the building, but actually doing the cloud, going to the Salesforce model per se out there. So it was a good question, but I think they scrambled so fast. Now they got to take that step back and go, you know, forward from there.
Yeah, one more thing I want to add there is that along with this, another trend I've been seeing, which hasn't really come out in the news headlines very much, is that now businesses are starting to realize, ooh, we need a business continuity plan next time and rehearse that. So in case something, you know, cataclysmic does happen, whether it's from a, you know, physical disaster or even a cyber attack, we need something in place that we can get out quickly, our workforce, and mobilize them without any downtime. So anyway.
Yeah, that's going to be huge.
That's actually a fantastic point, because what we're going to see there is we're going to see business continuity change as we know it. Currently, we went from backups, which is basically just how do we save your data to get it back if we need to, into the posture of, okay, now we're not just worried about your backups, but if a disaster recovered or that a disaster happened, how are we going to recover you to the point that you can continue to function your business as you're essentially working through that disaster, right? Well, now what we've done is we've moved that even further along to say, okay, now we have everybody working from home. Business continuity, what are we thinking? Like, how are we backing up that executive's computer and providing them the ability to get to that data? Because it's inevitable that people don't save back to their primary infrastructure. They're always going to save something to their computer because it's quicker, and, oh, I'm just going to work on this later. So the business continuity aspect is actually, this is going to change the formation of that with, now we need to be looking at how do we protect the local system, back it up, provide a virtualized solution, and get people working faster if something happens to my laptop. I think that's going to change the business continuity structure going forward, and that's something that's definitely going to have to be considered in how we both come out of this and how we prepare for something like this in the future.
Wow, yeah, that's a definitely good point. Now, Mike, as Chief Compliance Officer, you know, we'll talk about the next risk here, that's compliance. What kind of issues or problems have your banking clients come up with? Are they having any issues with the GDPR or the CCPA or any other, you know, legislations or mandates like that?
Sure, Robbie. Well, probably the main reason that Results has a Chief Compliance Officer is because of our banking clients. We've got a significant number of community banks that we provide full IT services for, and they fall under regulatory requirements from the FFIEC is the primary provider of requirements under them, the GLBA. There's a host of regulations that the banks have to comply to. The federal government has a vested interest in making sure that the banks are secure from cyber threats. And because, well, they're a core component of our economy, and they're the place where all the money is kept. So banks and bank customers are frequent targets of cyber attacks, and banks are required to have in place a whole set of strong cybersecurity policies and controls to protect them from that kind of data breach. So for banks, IT security compliance means having in place policies, procedures, and controls to protect customer data, to ensure confidentiality of that data, and to, you know, ensure integrity of that data that's out there. So the challenge is, and the challenge in the pandemic has been, that a lot of those policies and controls were built to protect systems that were safely secured and managed in the bank's internal and private networks. So when people were sent home to work, now the banks have to be able to guarantee that there is appropriate security and controls in place to protect customer information and banking systems that are now being remotely accessed from outside their networks. So that means in order to continue to comply with that, they have to take the extra leap, kind of like what Tim was saying, of making sure that those people who are working from home and maybe accessing confidential information, customer bank account numbers and information and out there are equally secure. And by the way, these are concerns that any business should have, banks or otherwise. The big difference between a bank and any other business is that the banks have federal regulators that walk in on an annual basis or every 18 months and look over their shoulders and make the banks prove that they have these controls, policies, and procedures in place, and that they can make it work. And they carry a big, ugly stick to whack them if they don't have those things in place. For other businesses, it's largely a voluntary compliance. Although, as you mentioned, the GDPR, the other regulations that are becoming increasingly broad for customers. A lot of our customers that are not banks also have other business customers that are requiring them to prove that they are doing cybersecurity appropriately. So all those are out there. Well, kind of circling back again, so a lot of our banks were in a fairly good place because part of those federal regulations require that banks have a pandemic plan in place. They're actually required to have a written plan that says, here's what we're going to do in the case of a pandemic to ensure that we can continue to provide our customers with critical banking services. And so a lot of these banks had at least thought through what are we going to do to some extent, and hopefully had some type of plan for remote access. A lot of these plans were built upon the assumption that, okay, we're not going to be able to get back to our building. We're not going to be able to get to these things. And we need to be able to work remotely. So most of our banks had some form of remote access planned. But I will say to a large extent, and as Tim has pointed out, gee, we really didn't plan on everybody working from home and being unavailable for that time. So a lot of those issues come around to the same kind of things that Tim brought up. Our clients, our bank clients, and our compliant clients really need to sit down and think very strongly about how can I protect my critical data when it's no longer sitting securely within my walls. So, and kind of to also tack on to the whole concept of disaster recovery and business continuity, this pandemic plan is definitely one for, it's a specialized case of a business continuity and disaster recovery plan, which is a great thing to have in place for any business, to sit down and think, what if, for any reason, I mean, in this case, it's a pandemic, but it could be a winter storm, a hurricane, flooding, almost anything that stops my people from getting into the office. And the business needs to think, do we have that ability to shift operations to another location or to work from home? And what does that look like? And most importantly, I think, is what do I have to have in place to make sure I can make that changeover quickly in the event that disaster does happen?
Okay. Just a side question here for anybody who wants to answer this one. Does a results technology actually help SMB clients write their business continuity plans, or do you offer consulting services to kind of walk them through that process?
Absolutely. Again, this is Mike. And actually, I think that's a core feature of our service. Because we work with a lot of companies that have compliance requirements. One of those big compliance requirements is to have both a comprehensive IT security policy and to have business continuity policy. And what we realized early on is because we act as the full IT department for these companies that have these requirements, that we had to sit down for ourselves and write a policy that said, here's how we are going to manage IT security and systems for your company. And so we have a full list of IT management policies out there. And all we need to do is flip that policy around, write it again from the client side that says, hey, we as client of Results Technology require our systems to be managed in this way. And voila, we have a set of IT policies and procedures then that they can put their name at the top of and work forward. We also work with other clients that aren't fully managed with us, and we absolutely provide pretty much a full set of IT policies and a template for disaster recovery as part of our regular service.
And what makes that neat, Robbie, is that what this is Patrick, but what makes that really cool is that as we sit down with them and help design that through the template and answer all the questions that, you know, come with a business continuity program and policy, we then know how to manage that client in business continuity solutions, in, you know, working from home solutions, in IT, you know, data, Wi-Fi access, all this other stuff. So we actually become a partner with them. In regards to when they have this, we know exactly what they want managed, how they want it managed, what the steps are, which when the adverse event does happen, we can easily just hop in and say, yeah, we already know how you want it done without saying, hey, can you help me figure out what your policy is? You know, with us helping them write it and consulting through it, it allows us to move quicker and make things easier for the client.
And I'll say because our policies were written to accommodate banks and other companies that go through regulatory scrutiny, our written policies have stood the test of time and meet all those requirements. And so most of our bank clients, when they've boarded with us, have really just scrapped their existing policies, adopted ours, and moved forward.
Excellent. Now, Mike, with this work from home, there's obviously been a whole plethora of security issues. I mean, I've been blogging about them to my blogs recently. There's a whole host of, you know, phishing attacks, you know, spoofed websites, like going to, like, the World Health Organization spoofed website. You're being coerced to download, sure, like, information about the COVID ID. You know, it's really a false website, so they can hijack your credentials. Then we've got things from, like, from the IRS spoofed emails saying, oh, claim your stimulus refund money here. Then emails coming out saying, oh, your loved ones have COVID IDs, send donate money. But the biggest one is the use of video conferencing tools, what we call Zoom bombing. Can you tell me about these security issues and just elaborate on them and how people are dealing with them now as they're working from home?
Sure, you've hit a lot on a lot of big ones, and there's even a broader set as we go out there. So, there's a real host of issues, and let's say the big issue is that when people work from home, all those security policies and those assumptions that are made about security for business when it's sitting behind, you know, your company firewalls with your company managed workstations and on your company internet connection and everything else out there, they kind of go out the door when now your IT staff is trying to support these securely, all these people who are remotely accessing from home, when you really don't know much about what's going on in those homes. So you have that, you know, are they, as like Tim said, you've got a wireless infrastructure. Gee, did they set that up appropriately with security, or are your neighbors sharing your internet connection? Bandwidth is a huge problem. If you're relying on what may be a shared neighborhood cable connection to get in there, and the simple fact that the Internet of Things is something that's a huge issue right now. Almost all those smart devices now that are sitting in your home, your Ring doorbell, your Wi-Fi enabled thermostat, your smart locks and garage door openers, and your refrigerator, everything that might have an internet connection now, A, competes for bandwidth, but B, also can become ultimately a vector for attack or for somebody to get inside that network, which is now also supporting your connection back to the home office. So all of those things become important, and the way to kind of restrict those is to understand what those are, and then control what you can in permitting this to come in there. And we'll kind of circle around to some things like the Zoom bombing in here in a minute, but we certainly recommend that when companies are having people work from home, the ideal situation is you're sending them home with company-owned equipment, company-owned laptop, wherever possible, so that you have some assurance that they are appropriately configured, that they have antivirus, that they have the most recent patching. For those clients of ours that have company-managed client, we have agents already installed on those desktops and laptops that permit us to ensure that they have the most current patching. We'll get alerting for any virus infections and can work on getting those locked down. We can also ensure that they have maybe additional security controls in place, like blocking USB drives from being used or plugged into those machines, because that can be a source of malware or data leakage. And then we really want to make sure they're using a truly secure VPN technology. That's virtual private networking. So when you connect back to the company or you're going anywhere else that requires a secure connection, you're doing it over a fully encrypted pipe that's not going to permit anybody else that might be sitting on your home network from seeing what's going on between your desktop and the company. We definitely recommend that companies use and require multi-factor authentication. So it's not only important to keep data encrypted, but make sure that when you're attaching to systems, both in the company and to all those web applications that are becoming more and more popular out there, that you're using a second factor of authentication, either an application on a smartphone or a text back, to ensure that the users who are logging into systems from remotely are doing it, are really them. They're the people who are supposed to be doing it. A lot of what you brought up, the host of phishing attempts, all those cyber scams that are out there. One of the things that we learned years ago when the first round of CryptoLocker came out, the malware that went out there and the first case of ransomware that was out there was coming in, we realized we were spending hundreds of hours working with our clients to get them recovered from these encryption of their critical files. And we knew we had antivirus in place. We knew we had good firewalls in place. We knew we had good backup in place. All these features, all these technological things were in place, and yet they were still getting infected for this. And the reason they were getting infected is people were clicking on links in emails or opening executable files or Word documents loaded with macros that were causing this malware to go out there. And that still remains the number one vector for malware and for other software that can permit somebody to take over your systems and all out there. And really, although you can put all these anti-spam filters in place and everything else, the one way to really protect against that is just to train all the people in your company and test. Make sure that they know that training that you've given them is sunk in. We call it security awareness training. And we provide that as a service to all of our clients simply because it turns out to save us far more time, money, and labor expense for not having to recover from malware attacks than it does to provide that out there. So the most important part of that security awareness training is simply training people to not click on links, not open these things, to recognize when there are scams, to recognize all these opportunities, particularly at this time, to know what is real, know what is not, look for all the little details out there, and if you have any suspicion at all, you know, again, don't click. We add to this, and again, this is provided to all our clients and their home users. Now, once they're out there, all that training and the fish testing to follow up with that. That means we send out our own scam emails. We send out our own scam links. But this time they don't lead to anything bad, but they do alert back to the user who clicks on it that they've made a bad mistake. We can report back to the company owners and all the rest that if they have some people who seem to be prone to fish testing, to phishing. Generally, it's a great thing. If people know that they're going to be phished after they're tested, then they become more alert. They become more aware and less likely to do this. So I think this is one of the strongest things we can do for our clients to do that. We even provided additional free training for all of the home users, the families of our home users out there, so they could click and learn as well because, again, these computers that are now sitting on a home network, you don't want them to be exposed to the malware that's been introduced by your teenage daughter who clicked on something as well, so on another machine. So I think that's our strongest thing there. The most important thing for our clients to remember is you want to maintain security from all those other internet-enabled devices that are now on your network, and certainly be aware that that's a lot bigger domain than it used to be.
And Ravi, you also brought up, some of the Zoom issues that were going on. And it was funny that with that, Zoom was a great resource, a great solution for a lot of people. And then, nobody really dug into how, if there were any exposures or whatever, and the next thing you know, there were limitations on that tool, such as Zoom bombing, very lack of security in some areas, open doors. And what have you found with this, with everybody working from home, how quickly, this industry can move, because they've upgraded that and added all the security features that you can't believe within a quick time frame. The states are starting to open up, but just look what, how that helped out. And then you have Microsoft Teams is the other big one that people keeps talking about,
right.
Where they can have these resources, everybody and their brother working together and making sense. Well, what they found is Zoom looked like the Brady Bunch, and they can see everybody and have, a picture and see everybody. And Zoom came out, you could only have four at a time. And then all of a sudden they were like, I got to add more people, because they lose that teamwork aspect behind it. They lose that feel that they are still part of somebody. And then, you have the security side of it. Then you have the common sense side of it, which is the, don't have people walk into the background like the old CNN guy over in England where his kids came in and his wife came sliding in to try to get them out. I was on a call earlier today with somebody and their cat walked in front of the camera. We're starting to accept different things, in the backgrounds and, make it fuzzy. And, Teams didn't have the concept to, they only had blur the background. You couldn't add a background to it where Zoom did. So not only was there, security issues that have quickly tightened up and everything solidified, but I think what you're finding is that there's more and more features, tools, things that will make it easier no matter what our next step is, be it this comes back or a snowstorm or a, the other type of threat for any business, that they can work from home and still have that sense of professionalism as well as all the tools to be able to be safe, secure, and go out there and see things. So I think that's the other side besides the security that we're seeing happen within this.
Yeah, Zoom security, and I'm glad you reminded me to zoom back to that subject. I think the largest amount of issues with Zoom from a security standpoint is also built to the great utility it has that was quickly adopted by teachers for classrooms or people opening up to have large meetings. It's great for large groups of people to get in there. And the openness of that ability, the ability to send out a link and say, hey, everybody, just join on this call, opened it to those Zoom bombers, because at that point you're not locking it down to specific people. You're not restricting it to you're not using that multi-factor authentication to ensure that the people who are joining the meeting are the people you want to. And Zoom does have that capability, and it's simply not used by so many of people out there, because their intent is to be able to just publish a link and have people quickly join a meeting. It takes additional effort, like anything in security, to use the additional controls, to lock it down, to make sure that you're seeing who is joining your meeting and then permitting them to come if they've authenticated themselves. Those are all capabilities built into Zoom that people can be using and need to be aware of that. So again, like Mike says, internally we use Microsoft Teams as a secure way to communicate with a video chat between ourselves, because we have that locked down to only our internal users. But with Zoom, we also use that for just a weekly, daily all hands get together, because we can do that, and we just know we're not going to be using that to discuss client information. We still lock it down a reasonable amount on there to make sure we're only getting the right people in. but it's a better venue to have 20 people up on the screen at once, which is a great get-together when we're all working remotely. But we also recognize that it's a slightly less secure platform, and therefore we're not going to talk about anything that means that is client confidential.
Right. Now, just two side questions here that kind of came up to my mind here. You talked about multi-factor authentication. Have you done any work with biometrics like fingerprint, iris, or even facial recognition in that process? And two, another area which I've seen, which has been an issue from WFH working from home, is the ability for the IT security team to deploy patches and upgrades to their company-issued wireless devices and laptops, because now everybody's got a different network. You know, nobody knows how to really deploy them in a safe and secure fashion. So have you dealt with both of these issues?
Yes, absolutely. Well, the first one, again, we're not a developer. We're not a company that develops two-factor authentication or anything out there, but we certainly make use of existing things out there. Facial recognition, biometrics are things that are certainly a way to add to a multi-factor authentication, but they don't constitute themselves really a way to do that. So I guess we can explain multi-factor authentication. Anyone listening means that typically you have, in addition to having, I have a username and I have a password, but now I have to have an additional factor out there to ensure the systems that I am who I say I am. And these days, the most common way to do that is for your system. It says, okay, I've got your username, I've got your password. Now I'm going to send back to you, I'm going to send back to a text address, an email address, or to an application that I know you have on your phone, a special code that you then re-enter to me. And I'll know that you're not somebody else pretending to do that who's gotten the username and password. The additional of the biometrics can be if I have I use something with my facial recognition or my thumbprint or something like on my phone, again, to open it up or to also acknowledge that I am who I am. One of the problems with those kind of biometrics is that when you store, when you tell your phone or you tell a device, here's what my thumb looks like or here's what my face looks like, it doesn't just store a picture of your thumb or a picture of your face. It stores a hash. It stores a code that says, here's a set of codes that kind of describe the face or describe the thumb, and it puts that away in a secure location. And so when you run your thumb, it recalculates that hash and sees if it matches up with the one that it has stored. And there are cases or times it's possible for somebody to steal or get that hash as well, and then all of a sudden that code that describes your thumb or describes your face is now out there for them to use and open up all these other areas. So that's a significant issue. But what we really want to see out there is at least some kind of two-factor authentication or multi-factor authentication. It's fairly easy to set up now, and cybersecurity is a moving it's a moving goal, and we're constantly having to find ways to move one step ahead of the thieves out there.
Okay, excellent.
Robbie, what was your second question on that?
Yeah, I know number two, and I lost track of the second one.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, sorry, I forgot about that. But anyway, yeah, it was about deploying software patches and upgrades to company-issued wireless devices.
Yeah,
laptops.
So,
because
yeah, what works with...
As we're seeing
go ahead.
Yeah, everybody has a different Wi-Fi network at home, so, people are kind of figuring out, okay, well, how do I deploy this,
Yeah,
the main reason
what's unique with
us.
I'm
sorry,
is
Patrick,
that we,
go right ahead.
Okay, sorry, Mike. What's kind of unique with us is that some of the companies out there will have that issue. We actually utilize a tool that it doesn't matter what Wi-Fi network you're on and so forth. It also allows us to monitor the system, allow us to be able to see what is going on in the system, send alerts to us. So if my laptop, when I'm sitting at home, starts to overheat or have a hard drive issue or a memory issue, it will alert the team back at Results or any of our clients. It would alert the team back at Results Technology that, hey, there's an issue going on. Through this same style of tool where we can manage the device, it does the patching, and it manages the patching through it. So it doesn't matter where it's at. So, like, our clients are not seeing this type of an issue because we're patching it as they're out there, and they could be on a Wi-Fi network or somewhere else. Larger organizations that, you know, rely on their employees, or any organization that relies on their employees to be in the building, plugged into their network, logged in, everything else to have that update happen, are running into issues like you mentioned. And that then opens up the security issue. They're not patched. They have things that are open and being at home and maybe allowing other people to utilize that company laptop or desktop at the same time could open themselves up to issues. But what's really neat with us is that most MSPs out there, I would say, they utilize a tool that not only does it monitor and help manage the devices that are out there, it also tracks the patching and makes sure it gets loaded up on it, which saves a lot of headaches down the road, as you can imagine.
Excellent. Now, Patrick, how did your company deal with the sudden, all of a sudden, boom, we got to work at home now? How did you mobilize your workforce, and how do you help your clients?
Well, we just locked the door and told them good luck, but no, just kidding. What we did is, as I mentioned before, we were a little prepared just for what we had set up in our own policies and so forth out there. So everybody knew what, you know, the basics that they had to do. But again, we ran into the fear of, okay, do we, you know, how do we get about the teamwork, the culture, the camaraderie, the answering of questions with each other. Hey, is anybody working on this issue for this client? And we knew we were going to have an issue with that. So we kind of took that step back and said, okay, as a group, where do we go with this? How do we help it? You know, our employees, as they're running into this stuff, how do we do it? So we started thinking outside the box. It's like, okay, we have to definitely communicate, be totally transparent, and communicate with our employees. And some of it we communicated with our clients as well. But it was like, hey, this is what we're seeing. This is what the government's seeing when we can get back in the office. Do you need something in the office? We actually have a couple people that will be one person in the office, and we have it set down to three people, and that's the only people that can be in our office for deliveries, for mail, for grabbing tools that we need, and then we can then set those outside or whatever. If somebody has to come to the office, everybody's in masks and everybody's got gloves on, because we're not a huge company, but we're not a small company. But if we were all in the office and one person got it and it takes 3 weeks to recover, you know, hopefully, knock on wood, the company would be, you know, handicapped for three straight weeks. And so that's the fear that we have. It's like, how do we come out of this anyway? How do we go slowly into the next level? But we were lucky. We got to move quickly. We got everybody set up at home. We had policies and procedures set in place. We were on the lucky side of it. And so then we just communication. And then we sat back and said, okay, how do we figure out to keep teamwork? So we use a lot of the tools that we have. So, you know, we mentioned Microsoft Teams. We utilize Zoom. We utilize anything you can imagine, just, you know, texting other people and so forth. And so we make sure between Tim, myself, Mike, and other managers in the organization to reach out either individually or as a group to all our people. We have Zoom calls, as Tim mentioned earlier, every afternoon. And we went with Zoom instead of Teams because they can see everybody. We have 20 people in our organization. All 20 people can see each other. We can talk. We can we can kind of have that camaraderie that we need. And then that's where we give tips and tricks and kind of give other aspects that we're seeing out there. You know, whatever, like now that everybody's starting to loosen the requirements from work from home, it's we're asking, okay, what are we seeing with our clients? As those requirements change, how do we go out and make sure that our clients are set up for success when they get back in the office? What tools do they need? What will they need, you know, 6 months from now as we, you know, see what's happening at the home? You know, hey, we may be buying a lot of webcams in September or whenever they get back in stock. We may be buying, you know, Chromebooks to help out the people who don't have anything at home and doing that. But with our Zoom calls, we have polls. We have, you know, what happened today in history. We have themes. We have different things to keep the morale up and constantly communicate and be transparent with them. But it was a scramble. Like I said, I was out of town. And then from that, we just rely on working up with the teamwork, talking to people, being in front of them, asking questions. And we have a reward system or a system where other people can give kudos to other people within the organization. And if they get so much, they get gift cards or whatever like that. And we even do that on our Zoom calls, which keeps people involved, you know, recognizing each other's accomplishments and, you know, how to get through this. 'Cause we're in the tech industry, so some of these people, you know, don't have family. They're living in an apartment by themselves, and so we make sure we reach out to them. And then the other thing we did, Ravi, is we also realized that there was a lot of other companies out there that were affected by this pandemic and shut down. And there's a lot of restaurants that are just, you know, doing delivery or curbside pickup. So we used to have lunch and learns for all our employees where we would provide lunch and we'd go through either a new tool or a new procedure or policy or whatever to learn. And that money and gave it to our employees and said, okay, go out to a local restaurant, not a major chain or anything, but you know, one of your favorite local restaurants and buy your family dinner and the company's going to pick it up. So, it provided a boost for them as well as for the local restaurant industry around here because how affected they are. And, you know, depending on how long we're out, we may do that again, you know, as often as we can as a company to help other organizations out that were highly affected more than we were in this. So, yeah, it was a quick, holy cow, we have to do something. You know, knock on wood, we had some things in place to be able to get people up and running. If not, we had the resources to get the stuff fast. And we got everybody at home safe with the right steps in place if we have to step out. So it was kind of crazy.
Well, yeah. Okay, now as the work from, or I guess the lockdown, the restrictions are starting to ease. What should businesses do, especially SMBs, need to be thinking about as they start to migrate back to their traditional brick and mortar offices?
But certainly,
go ahead, Tim.
I said that certainly, you know, the question that's coming into play now, right, is how are we going to return back to whatever normal is? So we're actually at a benefit of a point where we can start looking at that and then be proactive. For instance, in our office, we've decided that even though the quarantine is lifting or the stay at home is lifting on the 10th, we're not going to necessarily return until the 1st. Even as we return on the 1st, we're now talking about offsetting how the employees come in, a rotational type of schedule in the office versus bringing everybody back in the office. We're lucky enough that we have a fairly large space. So it's one of those things where we're going to bring them back in and then we're going to make sure that there's enough distance between them that it kind of meets the social distancing guidelines, if not exceeds that guideline. So it's really kind of a transport of not only bringing the people back, but now all of a sudden we got all this equipment that's been out in the world and outside of a, you know, a maintained, clean environment. It's, you know, there's three or four of us that go into the office a couple times a week just for deliveries or just to be there in case whatever needs to happen. And we're constantly sanitizing, right? So it's one of those things where, you know, we need to make sure that as everything is coming back into the office that these employees have taken out, that we're doing that in the best way to sanitize and make sure that those themselves are clean and in that nature. You know, we talked about productivity and morale. You know, what was the difference versus being in the office and being in the work from home scenario? I'll tell you, it's for us, we actually seen a great improvement into this process. You know, it's the staff has completely worked as functional, if not more functional, than they were when they were in the office. So we've seen that. You know, Patrick talked very much about, you know, the morale, how we continue to make sure that that is functioning. For us, morale, culture, those are huge in our company. So to ensure that those things keep going, we do the daily hits. We do the, you know, the one-on-ones. We're buying the dinners. Those are all part of, you know, something that's extremely important to us as far as doing that. As well as when we're returning into the office, we need to evaluate, you know, where were really the stepping stones and the falling points, what fell through the cracks as we were moving people out of the office. How do we create policies for not only ourselves but our customers and the SMB group as a whole to really say, okay, well, you know, they're predicting this may come back again in the fall. Okay, well, here's a great time to evaluate how it went, what went wrong, what we need to do in case this happens, to really prepare the small business or any business for that matter to actually go back and do this again if that would happen. You know, Patrick mentioned, you know, if there's a sale on monitors, maybe we want to buy monitors and just stockpile them in case we need to send our workforce home. Same thing with microphones and with video cameras. These are things that are going to give us the opportunity to say, we did this in a reactive fashion. How do we now turn this into a proactive solution that if something like this were to hit in the fall or hit 5 years from now or whatever the scenario is, we now have these plans in place as part of a series of policies and procedures that can do that. You know, we talk about, are things going to return back to normal? One of my favorite quotes is from a movie, Tombstone, where Doc Holliday looks at Wyatt Earp as he's on his deathbed, and Wyatt Earp is talking about normal, and Doc Holliday says, you know, Wyatt, there's no such thing as normal. There is only life. I process that into, that means it's ever-changing and it's ever-evolving, right? So what is normal today isn't going to be normal tomorrow and so on and so forth. And that's what we have to do is say, okay, how are things changing in the hardware market, in the software market? How are we going to use products like Azure or the cloud to formulate these solutions that really prepare companies to do that? You know, we look at the overall, you know, not only are we responsible for their environments and helping them get to a point of, you know, proactiveness, but on the same thing, how are we being financially responsible, right? So how are we going to save them costs? Because I think one of the things that we're going to see is we're going to see a huge reduction in what I believe in the real estate market. We've now taken the entire work structure and moved it into the home. So we've essentially proven that we no longer have to be in the office. So now companies are going to be looking at how are they going to reduce costs? Do I need as much office space? Can I reduce my square footage? Do I need enough, all this bandwidth, right? Can I reduce that? Do I really need to buy hardware or can I just do a subscription-based model much like we do with Microsoft 365, except with my servers, my file structure, so on and so forth, and really start looking at how we not only prepare for this,
as I believe the workforce, a large portion of the workforce will continue to stay at home and will probably stop traveling as much as they were, because now we've proven we can do it remotely. So as far as coming back from what we've experienced, what we went through, back into the office, and then looking forward to the future, how do we turn this into something that's a proactive solution? I think there's a lot of conversation still to be had around that. I think we're going to see a lot of, you know, quote unquote normal change even more. And I think there's going to be plenty of places to save money via, you know, square footage of your office space versus, you know, maybe now I'm no longer buying multiple workstations, because some of us do have a work site set up at the office, and then we also have that same work site set up at home, so we can just make it easier back and forth. Now I can reduce my costs because I'm only having my staff work from home. So I think we're going to see a lot of different things come out of this and how we prepare for the future based on what our reaction was and what we've seen the weak points at in the industry and the work from home environment.
Excellent. Now, Mike, what about the technology and coming back from the office as, you know, the transition from work from home is happening? What do people need to be thinking about specifically?
Well, they need to remember that this is a pandemic, after all. So you need to treat that equipment coming back like it's potentially infected, and that's both physically and electronically. So if you have people coming back now with equipment, those monitors and laptops and microphones and webcams and all the things they've left taken from the office, they're bringing them back. Treat them appropriately. Make sure that they've been cleaned and disinfected so you're not potentially exposing anybody to anything that's you're not hoping to bring back to the office. But you also need to treat them as if they are infected in the form of electronic viruses and malware or anything else as well. Remember, those home networks, although we've made all the moves we could to help ensure that they're as secure as possible during this time, a lot of people were sent home and put to work remotely using tools that were at hand and machines that were at hand and may not have been the most secure at that time. So I think it's probably best for businesses to treat those devices as if they are infected with malware. Make sure you go through the steps of plugging them into a secure part of your network that's not on the main line. Put them in an internet-only connection so that you can run anti-malware, make sure all the patches are in place, make sure antivirus is up in place. And if you have any suspicions at all, and you have the time and ability to do it, it's probably may not be a bad idea just to do a straight wipe and a reload of those machines that you that were out of your control during this period of time. If they were under management, if they had, like, for instance, the results management tools in place that had a We have the records, we have the knowledge that they were secure all this time, then you should be able to bring them back and go through the physical disinfection and plug them right back into the network. But if there's any doubt at all, they should be treated as if they are infected and go through all those steps to ensure that once they are plugged inside your internal, your trusted network, that they're not going to be a source of pain and trouble later on.
Okay, excellent. Now, Mike, as we wrap up the show here, there could very well be a second wave of this COVID-19. In fact, I've been reading some headlines as restrictions are being lifted, there are more people actually getting sick. There's an uptick. How can businesses actually prepare themselves for the next work-from-home order? I hope it doesn't happen, but it could very well happen. I think people are projecting fall, winter time. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the thoughts are, next time doesn't have to be the second wave of the pandemic. As we talked before, the next time that's going to send everybody home could be, or cause people to stay home, maybe the next huge snowstorm or a blizzard or a tornado or a hurricane, anything that's going to keep people from away. We've even seen cases where there could be a chemical spill on the highway that won't let people make it to the office. So anything that can prevent people from getting to the office but would permit them to work from home is a good something to plan for. And I think, as Tim has talked about, the one thing that we can all be doing to prepare for this is assume something is coming. Identify who are those critical people that you need to have be able to work from home, and then make sure that you have the equipment, the licenses, the infrastructure in place to allow those people to do that and to do it securely, especially if you're working for an industry that has compliance requirements, that has a reason to protect confidential information. Healthcare, financial companies are good examples of that. So make sure that you are prepared or ready before the next time. And as we're coming out of this first wave, and as equipment that, especially equipment that's deemed non-essential, becomes more readily available, take that inventory, make sure you have it on hand, and that you're ready to send it home with those people. And it doesn't hurt that if you've got these people that have identified as essential, make sure that their home environment is one that supports their, secure homework. Do I need to make sure I have that a laptop for them so that they're not using the same machine that their 16-year-old boy is using to do Worlds of Warcraft on at home? Do they have an internet connection that is adequate to do their work, to join Zoom meetings, to do all the rest? Do we need to help them upgrade to that? So make sure these things are in place. Make sure that they have a secure connection, and just be ready. I think, again, it's just a matter of scale. Most companies, many companies have the ability to have individuals work from home or work from home on a regular basis. It's just a matter of scale and making sure that you're prepared to have a large portion of your workforce working from home rather than just a handful.
Okay, just one final question, and anybody can answer this. Now, obviously, I know we spent a lot of time talking about COVID-19. Apart from that, we all are at risks of being a victim of a cyber attack. As individuals or businesses, we can never really get away from that. What do you tell clients or even your friends or family? What do you tell them what they can do to protect themselves to help mitigate that risk from actually happening? Give a laundry list of items, like using a password manager, so forth and so forth.
Yeah, this is Patrick. Yeah, if it's usually it comes in a couple different ways. Number one, a lot of times we tell people, if you get an email, just like you do with milk or anything else at home, when in doubt, throw it out. You don't want to, drink the bad milk and get sick. But yeah, use a password manager, change your password often. We have certain requirements through the compliance groups that we work with, but we, increase that. Use a password generator. Helps out as well. Two-factor authentication is gigantic within businesses to help them out. But constantly, common sense isn't so common. So a lot of times the list that we give, they're like, oh, yeah, I should do that. Make the password something different. I was on another podcast where I said, make the password along the lines of, your favorite movie or your favorite, motivational quote and change things up in that. It doesn't have to be something easy to remember if you have a password manager. But it has to be something that, makes sense and is secure and is hidden in something that you can have, and then change it around. I jokingly, you know, said make it your favorite movie. Somebody said, "Oh, I'm going to change mine to that because it'll make it easier." And I said, "Well, what's your favorite movie?" And they said, "Finding Nemo." And I said, "Then I know your password." So you got to be careful on that as well. Just as all the new scams coming out, where you have to fill that out. But they, you know, we're big on changing passwords, two-factor authentication. You know, private VPNs if you're at home, or you know, other VPNs if you're at work, in that end. And in fact, you know, as I'm sitting here talking about passwords, the funny thing is tomorrow is May 7th is National Password Day. So maybe change your password on that day, or do something along those lines so it helps out, you know, along those lines. But I mean, we have a plethora for businesses and everything, but it's just a lot of times just common sense. If it doesn't make sense through an email to wire transfer $80,000 to somebody, pick up the phone and call them. Because that's where these hackers and attackers always look at, is, you know, somebody who's going to react quickly and not do something very smart in a quick time frame. Take that breath is the biggest thing I would recommend to people all over.
Okay. Excellent. I thank you for all of your time this afternoon. This is definitely a great episode, one of my best ones. I think there's a lot of great content that we covered regarding how SMBs need to survive through this pandemic. And once again, thank you so much for your time, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robbie.
Thank you.